Det här är Linus på baslinjen, en podcast om och för svensk tennis. Welcome to a new episode of Linus på baslinjen podcast powered by Zenis. And today we are gonna talk a lot about Zenis because the guest in today's episode is Santtu Leskinen, the head of marketing and communications at Zenis, which is the smart tennis system from Finland. Santtu was himself a tennis player who chose the college pathway. After his graduation, he worked as a coach at college before he spent 1 year at Google and then headed back to Finland. In this episode, we cover everything about tennis, but we also discuss why smart tennis systems is needed in tennis, the future for tennis technology, what features in tennis that is most used. We talk about in what way coaches can use tennis and what the team behind it are trying to improve even more. And if it will be possible to use it outdoor in the future. But besides that, we also cover Finnish tennis and talk about the latest success of the Finnish Davis Cup team. Please welcome Santtu Leskinen to this episode. All right, it's time for a new episode. And today I'm sitting here with Santtu Leskinen. Welcome to the podcast, Santtu.
Thank you, Linus. Good to be here.
I was thinking we will start with the background a little bit. Please tell us who you are and your background and connection to tennis, Santtu.
Yeah, I'll try to keep it nice and short and brief. But to kind of sum it up, I've pretty much held a tennis racket in my hand ever since I have memories. My dad put me up at an early age, to say the least, and one of the funniest memories I think, like when I was a child, was that my dad used to hang up like tennis balls, like they were like on a string and hanging from the doors, and like every time I would like walk by it, I would like try and slap it,
okay,
whether serving or forehand. So kind of like just getting, like I said, started off at an early age. But yeah, my background, I played tennis throughout the basic kind of a Nordic journey of playing the tennis European tournaments, played the ITFs. Came up to the age of decision time, whether it's from high school to playing some ITFs or to go to play college tennis. I chose the latter. Seemed a little bit more fitting for me. I was about somewhere around like maybe 350 ITFs. So like, I don't know if that kind of gives anyone any idea of like what the level was. Like I was okay, but I got a good amount of offers from the States, and ended up going. I think. Funnily enough, like back in the day, it was 2012 when I was kind of applying for schools. They contacted me through Facebook.
Okay.
I don't know if that's still a thing, or whether it's Instagram or TikTok nowadays. But like for me, it was Facebook. Yeah, didn't visit the schools and just looked it up and talked to a couple of guys on the team and ended up going to the States. Spent 4 years at University of North Carolina, Wilmington. Played there, had a fun, good enough career for a D1 tennis player. And then after that, went to do my master's in Texas as a graduate assistant tennis coach for the Concordia University. I spent 2 years there getting my MBA coaching college tennis. I personally think that that's like the coaching gig to me. Like that was so much fun. I think like building your own team and the culture, I think that personally like resonated a lot with me, and kind of the idea of staying there and being a college tennis coach kind of lingered around, but then faded away for some reason or another. And after my master's, I ended up moving to California. I worked at Google for a year. That was my first year off of tennis, which is kind of nice. A year without tennis there overall, just working in Silicon Valley and just enjoying the California lifestyle. And then after that was 7 years total, came back to Finland, went to the military actually after that, because we have mandatory military service here. Did that, and then after that worked for a kitchenware company for almost 2 years, and then figured that frying pans is not the move for me, but I want to be involved in tennis, and coached competitive tennis for a little while in in Helsinki here, and then Zenis reached out to me and they were looking for someone to take charge of their marketing, and here we are.
That was a nice wrap up, I must say. But you said you enjoyed the coaching gig as a college coach that much. Why didn't you choose to try to make that a career?
I don't know. I think I was at a point of life of kind of just finding different kinds of paths, and like the job offer that I got from California kind of came out of the blue. Felt like if Google rings you up and wants you to come there and work in California, you can't really pass up on that. So, I think like the college coaching, like obviously, we'll probably dive more into college tennis overall, but just the fact of kind of like the setup that you have there is that like you get to decide the culture of your team, you get to build your team, and there's like players come for a certain amount of times, and kind of like working out the scholarships and what kind of players do you fill your team with, or like there's a lot of different like interesting angles to it, which I think is a little bit different than, let's say, if I was even a high performance, high level coach here in Finland. It's a different setup for sure.
Yeah. And here at Google, a company I guess everyone knows what it is. How was that working for Google?
An experience for sure. I think it's if like like obviously a lot of people's kind of like what the vision that you have of the States, whether it be college or whether it be working at Google, you base it off of movies. But like to me, like if you've ever seen, I think it's called The Interview. And I think that sets in the Google scene, and Vince Vaughn, I think, is in that movie. But like, yeah, I think like it's pretty accurate. It's an interesting, cause like the headquarters that they have over there, it's the campus life is completely different from what you would expect. Like, let's say a general office job to be like, it's just kind of like, you want to be on that campus. There's gyms and you can go play hoops during lunch, and it's pretty cool. And I think, I mean, they obviously expect a lot from you, like when you're working, but like then they give you like the amenities to like really enjoy. And obviously it's we had a really international team there, which I think like important for personal growth as well, already like early on getting to be like, obviously I've traveled around the world, so it's easy to kind of hop in with an international group. But there was, I think, 15 countries there apparently, like approximately, that the kind of like the floor consisted of, and just a cool environment to work in for sure.
Okay, amazing. And like you said, now you're working for Zenis, which also is a partner to this podcast. Can you describe what Zenis is?
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of to put it in a nutshell, that we're a smart tennis court system from Finland. And I say system, not a court, because at the core of our company is the smart tennis court, for which we use patented audio triangulation and cameras to accurately track the ball and the player. But like I said, the on-court experience is part of it, which offers the true smart tennis experience, whether it's line call challenges, visible serve speeds, data, insights, and video, and that's all that you get on the court. But then off the court, the solution offers a mobile application, live streaming capabilities, tournament organizing tools, and a lot more cool stuff in the near future.
I see. And your role at the company is, what are you doing?
I'm the head of marketing and communications. So everything that you hear and see from our brand is kind of under my tasks.
Okay.
Hence me being on the podcast as well.
I guess. And were you a part of Zenis from the start of the company, or did you come in after a while?
I came in after a while. The company, like back brief background, is that the original Zenis was founded in 2014, and that was founded by two engineers, and they just used the audio triangulation, and that was kind of like the thing that they wanted to figure out, of like, how can you track the ball and how can you make accurate line calls with the audio. They tried to develop that for 2 years. The company unfortunately went under back then, but then the new current owners acquired the company in between 2016 and 2017. And then basically the only thing left of the original Zenis is the audio tracking, But other than that, like, we've just added on, because finding a or creating a system that just solves the line calling, it's not really, it's a one trick pony in a way. You want to have a more versatile system. So that's where like the cameras came in, and we're actually able to track the stats and the insights of the balls and the players. So.
Okay. And how big is it now? How many are using Zenis today around the, I don't know, is it only in Scandinavia or is it in the world, or how does it look like?
Yeah, so currently, because like the system that we have at the moment, it's indoors only, so that kind of limits a little bit of the market that we have, but we've started off in Finland, Sweden, Denmark and Norway, the Nordic countries, already kicked off quite well. Then we have a few systems over in the States, which is a huge market obviously for us, but then there are other countries like Poland, Lithuania, Switzerland, Hungary, I might be missing one or two more, but kind of spreading out nicely. We have a total of 78 Zenis courts installed at the moment, and about kind of what you asked, like how many Zenis users we have about approximately 100 active users per system. So it's a little close to 8,000-ish like active logged in users that kind of like coming into our system can be used, whether if you log in, you get the statistics and you get everything, videos, insights on your phone. But it can also like, it also provides a ton of value if you don't log in, if you just use the on-court experience.
Okay. Yeah, and if we look at the features or that Zenis has, why do you think, in what way do you think Zenis is needed in the sport of tennis if we look into the future? What does it bring to the experience of playing tennis?
There's multiple angles to that. I think like the easiest one to kind of tackle first is the line calling. I think you and I both and a lot of tennis players can agree that it's in a way it's funny. It's almost funny that we are still at a point in our sport where decent high level matches are still played with you and I making the line call.
Yeah.
You tell me if my shot was good or not. And
special.
Yeah, I think that's the most frequent question that I get from my friends. Let's say I play, because like I'm still fairly competitively playing here in Finland, trying to keep up with the Young Bucks in the National League matches and all that stuff. And I ask my friends to come and watch. And there are occasions where I play without an umpire and they're just like, who's like in charge of this? And I'm just like, it's a gentleman's sport. So we just call your own lines. So I think that whole like setup is one of the key factors, obviously. Like we want to emphasize that we're much more than just a line calling system, but I think that's kind of like the entry into like tech, because the second part of like why this is needed is that tennis is, at the same time as we're trying to develop the sport, but we're also competing against other sports. How do we get junior players and hobbyist players and adult players and any kind of players into our sport? And I think that's one of the, like, even though especially here, and I think Sweden maybe similar to Finland, but like tennis is booming in a way of, Sweden not maybe at the top level at the moment, not as good as in the glory days, but the number of players is increasing continuously. And I think while the iron is hot, why wouldn't you keep kind of like pounding and keep developing it and not get comfortable with the fact that like, okay, we have a lot of players now, but what about in 5 years? When there's another sport, there's padels and pickleballs and all these other sports that are coming to try and get people into other racket sports, big sports. I think the one of the main concerns in a way is that, like, for example, Finland, you have soccer, you have hockey, you have basketball, you have floorball, innebandy. All these sports that kind of take out the cream of the crop of like where people want to go and play their sport. So we have to find different ways to like make our sport more appealing. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, like when it kind of like ties into like the line calling system, is the fact that we need to make the environment also fairer. It needs to be more fun. It needs to be like a positive experience.
Mm-hmm.
Imagining like myself or yourself, like the first couple of times you go and play a tournament, there might be players and there's juniors who quit tennis after their first experience in the match because the situation is stressful.
Mm, mm, Yeah,
whether
exactly.
it be from an angle of like, oh, am I cheating? Is he cheating?
Yeah,
Did I cheat on accident? Should I cheat if he cheated?
yeah.
Like there's a whole bunch of like I think it's part of like, yeah, it's good that it makes you kind of like you have to be mentally tough to go through it. But I think like if you can soften that blow, because it's already psychologically like difficult enough to go play against and compete against your like best friends and favorite buddies already. And then you kind of like, let's say we eliminate the line calling kind of stress and pressure, I think that's already a huge step.
Yeah. And how exact is the system when it comes to the line calling, for example?
Yeah, so we've done multiple tests with the ITF where they use high-speed cameras that track about, I think it's 5,000 frames per second on the line. So we've been kind of comparing that into our system results. And we've gotten in those tests, we got an average margin of 7 millimeters as the average margin of error. And that to put that kind of in context is that Hawkeye gets to about, I think, it's 3 to 4 millimeters is what their like margin of error is. So we're pretty damn accurate, to say at least.
Yeah. And is that something you're still trying to improve even more, or is that good enough now and you're looking at other features to develop instead?
I think we're really happy with that accuracy already, because for us, the main goal isn't to compete with Hawkeye and to get to the Grand Slam stage. The main thing is kind of the 99.9% of players and clubs and tournaments and matches that are played outside of that. Because that's the thing, that like they have all the good stuff already on the tour, and let them do their thing. We're more than happy with 7 millimeters, because I think looking at tennis European tournaments, ITF tournaments, or even casual league play, the issue is not the balls that are this much out. The issue is when we talk about college tennis and ITFs, and where like it doesn't even fit on the screen anymore.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's where we can actually eliminate that completely. Because like close line calls, I think like you see it right now, like in Monte Carlo, like the referee made mistakes on clay.
Yeah.
The camera shows it differently, and the players are like, "What's happening here?" And so like even at that level, they're making mistakes. So that's where kind of put that into perspective, because obviously we want our system to be perfect in a way as well, but like we get some feedback of like, oh, like it missed the line call. I'm like, yeah, like that can happen with tech.
Yeah.
But did you notice the 250 shots before that it actually succeeded in? And it did its job, but it's the one time. And that's where obviously we want to get to a point where that's not an issue. But I think tech is, it's a
yeah, I see.
But
I
yeah,
see.
Yeah, kind of like sum it up. The accuracy is already excellent, and that's where kind of shifting our gear into focusing other things as well.
Yeah, and what other things is that you're focusing on and that you still want to improve with the system?
Oh, there's plenty on the table. I think one of the biggest things that like right now is on the table for us is the improved video filtering. That's kind of like to come in the future, but like we want to provide as well, because like at the moment it's pretty difficult to do any kind of video analysis that coaches do, especially like on a regular club or a regular academy setup. It's mainly using either an iPhone next to the player or then I don't know, hanging up a GoPro on the fence, manually going through it. For us, I think the goal is to make it even easier to get the videos and go over that video as well. Like you don't have to kind of like drag and search and kind of figure out where everything happens. But like with our kind of like the new updates that are coming up pretty soon, you're able to slice the video however you want. If you want to find all your forehand approach shots, if you want to find all your defensive slices on the backhand side, you can filter anything out of the video and make it really concise. So that's kind of tying into that we haven't really talked about, I think, even before this podcast, is kind of like how much can we provide value to coaches as well? Is that like you want to watch the video of your, let's say, 16-year-old player who played a match? Are you going to sit there for, let's say, hour 45, 2 hours, 15 minutes watching them? You have to be skipping over there, the ball, they're picking up balls and they're sitting on the bench eating a banana, and you're just like out there watching, and what are we looking for here? So it's like we're able to condense that a lot more. And let's say you've been working on your serve, you can only filter out just the serves. It's just that's kind of like the biggest cool update that I'm excited about, because I think for me at least, like from a player's point of view, not everyone likes to watch themselves play, but like I've always been like, if there's been a video, I've always been kind of keen on seeing what it looks like. Maybe that's just kind of maybe my technique is just so smooth and nice that I like to watch it. But
I think that would be super useful for the coaches, definitely. What is the feedback you get like more regularly from the users? If you look at both coaches and the players, what is the feedback you're hearing?
Well, start off with this. It's mainly only positive things that we're hearing, which is really nice. Obviously, motivating for us to keep on working. Anywhere we go, any country that we visited, any club, it's kind of whoever you're talking to. Obviously, there's going to be people who are not that into tech and they're a little bit hesitant when it comes to tech. I think that's more than okay. Not everyone needs to love it, but I think it's eventually we're going to get to the point where there are only smart courts, whether it's just Zenith courts or other courts. I think that's the direction that we're going to. So, kind of, they're eventually going to have to hop on board at some point.
You think so? You think all the courts will have one of these solutions? Yeah.
I think that's the future. Like I don't think we're going to get to the point where every single court, obviously there's going to be public courts and there's going to be like, but I think, let's say if we go fast forward 20 years from now, I think a lot of the courts are going to have at least some kind of tennis tech.
Okay.
On the court, because I think it's going to become we assume that it's going to be us. Obviously, there's going to be other players in there as well. But I think the vision is that it would be extremely strange if now that like the ball has started rolling, that it would shift back of like, okay, let's go back and let's not do tech in tennis at all.
No, probably not.
No, but like kind of come back to the feedback point.
Yeah.
Is that from coaches, obviously, we keep on developing our product. Like, we think that it's really good already. Obviously, it's continuous process. And now, like, we're getting to the point of, like, okay, we have the on-court experience for players already, which is perfect. There are some coaching tools and you have, like that you have and you can use. I like to use it because I still coach a little bit with the juniors and do some private lessons over here and there. I think the value is immense compared to doing a lesson on a court that doesn't have any system on it already. But we're already kind of like trying to build a team of coaches and data analysts around the world and kind of like just getting that ultimate feedback of like, we're not claiming that we are experts and we have the know-how already. But I think for us, we need to build our team and kind of like the credibility even more of like, this is not just us. This is actually the top coaches and top people of the world who are in tennis, who are actually developing this thing. And it's going to take it to the next height. So I think that's kind of like the feedback is positive from coaches, but I think like that's kind of like they want more and more out of it.
And that's where
like our mission is kind of help them to make it as easy as possible to use tech and data in tennis, because it is so new to so many people still.
Because it's so new and like you say, some people are a bit hesitant to the technology, but can you see if there's if all the generation of users are using it, even like older adult players, or is it mainly younger people that are trying it out? Can you see that?
You would think that it would be in a way that like, okay, younger kids are more like drawn to it, like that's kind of like the assumption. But it's funny to see, because like when we walk around here in Tali Tennis Center here and you see these 80-85 plus year old grandpas and grandmas playing, and they're using the system and they're checking the line calls, and I think those are the moments that like it just warms your heart in a way, because like I mean, like me, like I'm coming into this as a tennis guy completely, and it just warms my heart that like for someone who's likely played, because like I know like some of these like doubles pairings that are playing here, like they play every week, every single same time, same day that they're here, they have their like go-to time, and if we're able to provide more value to their tennis, I think we're on the right track. Because I think like It's just really cool to see. And I think like some of them are like just praising it in the locker rooms. It's funny to hear because like it's like,
yeah, like Mikko, like you can't make those bad line calls anymore.
That's really fun.
Yeah, and I think it's just awesome to see. And I think like for the kids, like they go onto the tablet and it's like it's the same. I don't even know what the kind of metaphor for us it was, like use like whatever toy, but like they're so accustomed to tech, it's crazy to see that like there's no hesitance on. They go up to the device, they start pushing buttons, and like it's so easy. Like some of the tournaments that they're hosting here, like they actually just had the under 12s national tournament, SM. And just because like the idea is like the tournament organizers are oftentimes asking like, okay, like is it gonna be like difficult to set it up and kind of like get everyone using it? And yeah, it's just like just tell them like which buttons to press, and they're figured out. And it's like there's no problem there. Like I mean, obviously our goal with the system overall, anyways, is the fact that we wanna keep it as easy and simple to use for anyone. Mm-hmm. But especially you see the kids that they, I mean, it's no problem. They already know. Even without using the system, it's easy.
Yeah. But I can agree. I've tried it together with you, but it's it's easy, definitely. Can you see which features that is mostly used, like with like both? I understand the line calling, but also around the drills and so on. Which ones are mostly used?
Well, for us, I think when we talk about features, line calling for sure, serve speeds. I think that's kind of plays into the fact that like how kind of young we are with tech in tennis as well, is that like the serve speed is like the coolest thing.
It's like the bench press.
It's exactly like the bench press, and I think it's similar to me. Like I play on these courts all the time, and I still like I want to see. Okay, the serve felt good. What was it? Like you're taking a look, and it just makes you feel a little bit better when you see it, like okay, like it's getting up in the 195, like I like that, that's good. So like serve speeds, and then the video. I think we're in this era where everything is like everyone has their phones and everything's possible to like film, and you can like basically see everything that you're doing, but sports is still a bit tricky to set that up. Either you have your friend or a coach filming you from the side, and that's where you see it. But like the fact that like all you have to do is scan a QR code and press play, and you already have basically the video is going to be set from the whole session. It just makes it so easy to get. So that's the most used kind of like when it comes to the features. I think on the more techie data and stats side, it's still kind of a work in progress, but same thing, like if you're into tennis and you're watching pro tennis, for example, we already, because like the statistics that you get from us, it's pretty much the same that you're getting from, let's say you watch an ATP match, of like what they're bringing up from the statistics. Where like people who follow tennis, they end up being kind of like, they get data put to their face all the time, so like when they use our system, they're a lot more accustomed to using the data on the system as well. Other than that, like on the court, I think there are like two main ones that people are using at the moment the most. Free play, which we have, and that's like the easiest mode to put on. I think it's been a great addition for our system, because it was kind of a zone where, because we had prior to free play like being added onto the system, there was a match mode and then like drills. But then hobbyists and kind of like if you don't know like what you want to do on the court, are you really gonna like put on the match mode? Like, okay, like we're not really counting games. Okay, like there's some drills, but like I just want to kind of like dink the ball around type of thing.
Yeah.
So that's where like it's perfect for that. And like, for me, it's the same thing. Like I put it on every single time I go play. It's just so easy to put on. And then in addition to that, is the new serve to target game that we have. It's been really popular, and I think from a player/coach point of view, I think it's just really cool to see that like people are enjoying practicing serves. I don't know how you see it in your coaching, but like for me, like it's very difficult to get players of pretty much of any age group, of any level, to focus on serving. difficult shot. Like, you don't get a sweat on. Like, your pulse isn't going up. It doesn't really feel like you're working out. And like with that, like, it's just kind of like this target drill. You have 10 serves. If you hit the target, it goes a little bit more difficult, and you get points and all this stuff. And I think it's just fun to see the like the gamification of it, and like the instant kind of feedback and dopamine hit that you get from you get a lot of points and you hit the targets. I think just a great add-on to the system.
Yeah, because we're talking quite a lot about the gamification, how important that is with the kids today. And I think that, like you said, that really is brilliant in that way, because it really makes it more fun. So yeah, I totally agree with that. How is it with, you were saying before that it works the best indoor today. Do you think we will see that it works outdoor in the future as well?
Yeah, on the roadmap right now, like, we're hoping that at the end of this summer, we're going to have a fully functioning outdoor unit as well. And that's really a game changer for us, game changer for the club as well, so that they're able to offer that for their users outdoors as well. Not as big of a deal maybe in Finland, where we have about a month of nice summertime weather of playing tennis. No, I'm just kidding. It's almost 3 months, which is nice. Like I said before we started to record, I see a lot of people already playing on the outdoor. I guess it's like fake grass, sand grass courts. I don't know what the word for that is.
I don't know either.
It's not super tempting to me, honestly. I think it's 4 degrees outside right now. People are playing in long sleeves, so. So the outdoor units is we're gonna do our finalized testing this summer. Hopefully right by the end of the summer we're gonna be able to start manufacturing them as well. So that's really, really cool for us, because like for example the United States, tennis for a lot of the states there is considered an outdoor sport. And same thing, you go down Spain, France, wherever, like Southern Europe, it's a little bit different. It's been a great start for us here in the Nordics with the indoor environment. It gives it a little bit more stability because the lighting is always the same. The weather is always the same. So it's easier to kind of like find out that what works and what doesn't work when it's a stable environment. And so far the outdoor testing has been just fine. Now it's kind of just weatherproofing the system so that it can stand the Finnish winter and Finnish summer. And
it's that everything. If it works in Finland, it will work all around, I guess.
Yeah, but that's where, you can imagine that, let's say, Miami, Florida is a little bit different circumstances than here, I think.
Because you're using both the cameras and microphones, or am I correct? Yeah. Okay. That's why it's a little more tricky outdoor, because like you say, the lights, and also the sounds, I guess, with everything around. Is that the reason why it's a little bit more trickier?
Yeah, it's changing lighting, because it's a little like it's unpredictable. And let's say that whether it's sun and whether it's clouds that kind of like move around, they create shadows on the court. So it makes the camera tracking a little bit trickier. And then like high gusts of wind, they can basically stop or slow down the sound from traveling to our microphones, which is, I think, kind of a testament of like what we're dealing with. And I think like how cool our product is. Just combining sound and video, I think that's kind of like comes back to like the earlier on when you talked about like the accuracy is the fact that like the audio is the fact that like how we're able to make accurate line calls. Okay. Because what happens is that like, let's say the ball bounces and then basically the five closest microphones next to the bounce detect the sound, and then they send it forwards into our cloud and into our system, and everything happens just like that, and we're able to get the line call as well. So it's
crazy.
I don't think I probably won't even do it justice. Our tracking team would probably give a more thorough explanation for it but I think outdoors Weather is pretty much kind of the trickier portion of it, and changing environment. And I think that's similar problem that might even be, I don't know if it's an issue for Hawkeye or not, but you're seeing mistakes happen on the Pro Tour as well. And there's obviously some reasons why it's happening.
Yeah, I see. But I'm really not an expert in this, but how can the system understand if it's a forehand or backhand you're hitting, because it can be both two-handed or one-handed or whatever. How does that work?
So it works on, because with the mics and with the sound, we're able to know like where contact point is being made. And what we do is, because we use the cameras also for the tracking, so that we see like the cameras bring us the reliability of like we know of like what happens and where it happens. Mm-hmm. And then the audio gives us the accuracy. So with the cameras, we just see on which side of the body it happens. And in your application profile, you just set your left-handed or right-handed, double-handed, one-handed, backhand. And now that we know that, we know your specs, we know your height, we know kind of like which side you play on. So from the video, we're able to see like, okay, this shot happens on the right side of Linus, it's a forehand.
It's amazing where we are with the technology. All right, Santu, we will move into some questions I ask all my guests. But before we do that, I know that Senis, you're based at Tallinn Tennis Center, where much of the Finnish tennis happens. So I just need to ask you shortly here, what's your view of Finnish tennis today, and where you are with everything?
A loaded question, I'm sure. but I think, yeah, just to kind of like briefly, I think we're at a good point, and I think the direction is the right direction. I think you can see it from the pro guys. Like, obviously, we don't have a big load of guys like at the top of the rankings, but we have like Emil Vuosivuori, I think, following in a way the path of Jarkko Nieminen of being that one leader of the pack. Mm-hmm. Now I think it's awesome to see that Otto Virtanen is rising up the ranks and kind of like getting close to Emil. We'll see kind of like where their careers turn out to. I think it's interesting to see who ends up being the highest ranked guy. But I think the Davis Cup success and the boom in the people participating with our sport, I think the direction is correct. But I, like I said in the beginning, like, and part of, obviously it's a little bit of a bias from my end because I'm coming from tennis, but the fact is that like now that like we got so lucky with the Davis Cup draws, we had so many home matches here in Helsinki.
Yeah, really.
We had a home match in Turku. We have so many in a row of like, it was just like the ideal steps for kind of like with COVID, because kind of like tennis was, I mean, I don't know if it's the same in Sweden, but through COVID, we got a lot more participants and people coming into the sport because they couldn't do their regular sports. So let's say soccer and hockey was banned, but tennis was still open because like you're far enough from each other and you get to play. So in hindsight, that was a really good thing for our sport. And we got a lot of more people into the sport. And now following that up with the Davis Cup success and with the guys playing well on the pro tour side. So I think the direction is great. We have a bunch of really good, I think the boys are 16. Mm. I have a couple really, really good guys who are playing now pretty high up in the ITF rankings already. So I can think the one I think concern, if there has to be some, I think just getting juniors to our sport and to compete in our sport. I think that's one of the things that I've kind of found in my coaching days, was the fact that when you start playing tennis, playing tournaments doesn't always come in hand right away.
No, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And I think I'm sure you guys, I mean, you probably, I don't know if you agree, and you've probably heard this multiple times already if you've spoken to people here, but I think it's weird that, let's say, if I sign up for basketball or soccer, initially, right away, I get a schedule of the tournaments and the matches that we're going to be playing.
Yeah.
And it's like, you sign up for that, and that's what you do. But with tennis, you're kind of like, okay, like, all right, so I want my son or girl to sign up for 2 days a week to play. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, what about tournaments? We'll see.
Yeah, but it's different. That's different in tennis. But I think, at least in Sweden, the clubs that are most successful in getting juniors to start playing tournaments are the ones that actually have a plan for that, that actually goes with groups of kids to weekend tournaments and so on. So I think that's the right way to do it, but it takes a little more work from the coaches, and it takes a little more initiative to make that happen. But I think that if you want kids to start compete, that's how you need to do it in today's society. I think, and I guess it's the same in Finland.
I think it's a valid point to bring that it's always resources, time, money.
Yeah.
And it's easier said than done, and it's like, I mean, that's why I'm not super vocal on like kind of complaining about it, but I do think that that is an issue that they will need to resolve. And I'm actually part of the players forum here in Finland for the Finnish Tennis Federation. There's a couple of us who still compete or have competed kind of like at a high national level, and I think those are some of the key points that we're trying to find a way of, like, how do we keep players, like, how do we get them to start and get into tennis, and like what kind of like holds them into the sport. Is it the friends you're training with, or could you expand your friend network when you play the competitions? You get to learn, you get to travel a little bit, you get to know more people, you maybe meet more friends. And then if you can keep that ball rolling and keep them at least like until, because like I think it's a difficult task, but I think one of the problems is also like at high school or after high school, what happens then?
Yeah, no, exactly. They go to college maybe, and that.
Yeah, they might go to college and like a local university, and then it becomes like, okay, like I'll just play like once a week or stop tennis completely, which is really unfortunate.
Yeah. But I think that's one of the biggest questions in Sweden now, how we can help the college player more when they are at least finished in the States, but maybe also during those years, how we can keep them in our loop, in our system, in a better way. We can see that the golf in Sweden has been so successful with that, for example. So I think we have a lot to learn there, definitely.
Are you following the Masters? There's some Swedish guy who's making moves, huh?
Yeah, Henrik Åberg finished second in the Masters, but so he's among the top now. Yeah, so that's
really cool.
It's really cool, actually. But okay, Santu, are you ready for some wrap up questions here?
Yeah, always.
What's the latest thing you learned that you didn't know before?
You might have to cut a little bit of dead time here in between my answer and your question.
have you learned something new the last couple of weeks?
Okay, well, this isn't really a very...
It can be anything.
Yeah, it can be anything. I'm pretty lighthearted. I was reading a book this weekend, and I was telling my friend about it. And I told that the author's name is Joe Nesbo. And then he goes, oh, it's Jo Nesbo. And I'm like, okay, so I've been pronouncing it completely wrong. So I learned that. And then also from that conversation, I go, because the main character's name in those books, it's a detective called Harry Hole. But I was reading it in my mind, like Americanized it completely. And I'm just like, well, his name is Harry Hole.
Okay, that's so, awesome answer.
Yeah, well, we'll go with that for now.
But that was great. It's Norwegian names, right? I guess. What are you trying to become better at the moment?
I have two things on a personal level. There's just embracing more and more gratitude in day-to-day life. I think that's one of my like personal goals, just in life overall, kind of brought yoga and mindfulness and meditation into my life a few years ago. And I think that's still an ongoing journey and trying to get better at of just enjoying each day as it is, and not worrying too much about the future. And another one that I set a goal for my well-being this year is, this is a very 30-year-old thing to say, but like my hips are pretty bad, so like my goal for the year is to do something towards hip mobility every single day this year.
Okay, have you done it until now?
I'm about 95%. There's a couple missed days there, unfortunately. I wish I could say that like I did it every day, but that's my personal development plan.
7 millimeters error is okay, so 99% is fine.
exactly.
A movie or book you have been inspired by? So now we already know you're reading sometimes.
I think, well, for me, like, if inspiration is the word that we're looking for, I think Will Smith's Pursuit of Happiness is, I think,
okay,
a really good movie to watch. Just inspiration on hard work pays off. Keep doing the right things, and you're gonna be rewarded at the end.
Okay.
And another answer would have been Joe Nesbo's Cockroaches. In this sense, but maybe that's not my inspirational book recommendation this time.
Pursuit of Happiness with Will Smith. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think you're doing in 10 years' time from now?
I hope that I will be spreading the good word of Zen is still in 10 years of time, but yeah, in a way that everyone already knows it in 10 years, so that I don't really even have to. Okay, my goal is that in 10 years, I'm not going to be doing an introduction on Zen is to anyone, because everyone knows it.
Everyone knows it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's good. Also, in 10 years' time, I will be 40, so I'll probably start dominating some 40-plus-year-old men's league matches as well.
Ooh, going on tour. I like that. All right, three more here. A non-popular opinion you have. I can say this is, how do you say, first time I'm using this question, so you're a little tryout here, if it works.
That's totally okay. I think, I don't know if it's an unpopular one, but it definitely is a polarizing one. I think, and I stand behind this, is that pineapple does go on pizza.
Okay. Yeah, that works. The Hawaii choice.
Yeah, yes. Classic.
I don't know how much you, but if we look at when you have coached before, maybe, or in your work, how have you changed your leadership the last couple of years? Can I ask that, maybe?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one thing that I've kind of noticed with this new generation of juniors coming in is that you need to gain their respect. I think authority right now doesn't come with just like your title. I don't know, kind of an issue probably in schools as well. But I kind of like realized that, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. I think in a way it's a positive thing as well, that it doesn't come just as it is for coaches, that like people start respecting you. I think you need to do a good job and lead by example, and guide them towards the path that you want them to kind of like be around. I think that in a way, like, I don't know how much that like changed my behavior personally, because I think, not to say that I'm perfect, but I've already like always been fairly good with, especially when we talk about kind of like the age group from, let's say, 14 to 18, for example. And that kind of like what I'm working with right now is like some of the high school kids over here, and I like somehow my energy resonates in a way with that group, or I'm able to kind of like connect with them a little bit better. But I think what I would have wanted from my coaches back in the day is to be a little bit more personal. Like, okay, I can't remember many times that a coach would have come up to me and like, hey, like, how are you doing? Like outside of tennis, like, what are you doing? Like, how are things? Are you energized? Like, how are you feeling? Like when you're coming to practice, it was more just like a hello and hop on and start doing.
Okay.
So maybe so, in a way of like being more personal, maybe.
Yeah. But I think that's I think that's great. I think when you have sometimes a lot of hours in a row as a coach, you lose some energy and you lose the personal touch along the way. Even if you don't want it, I think that it's easy that it happens. So it's good to make a reminder of that sometimes to yourself.
But I think that's a good point. In a way, is it an issue of coaches being underpaid that coaches need to work so much? Because I think like some of the coaches that I know here, and like they do only adult lessons, for example, and they start from, let's say, they have a 7-hour streak.
Yeah, I've been there.
same thing. Like I've done the country club hours back in the States, and it's that's a tough gig. That's a tough gig, and I think it's physically demanding, mentally draining. It's a tough one, and I think that's especially when I see some of those guys and girls who do that, and they're still like upbeat, energetic. I'm like,
that's up to you.
That's crazy that you're able to maintain that level.
It is because it's it's so easy to lose that. But yeah, I don't know where the problem lays, but I think it's. I heard a comparison where when we tennis coaches work 7-8 hours in a row and so on, like how many other works you're not allowed to work as many hours in a row as possible. Yeah. You're a pilot or like a doctor or whatever. I think there's reasons to that, and I think we should have that in mind as well if we want to have good, do a good job with all the groups. I guess. Okay, Santu, last of all, would you like to recommend anything? Whatever.
If this goes out to all the listeners, I would definitely recommend that if your club doesn't already have Zenith system installed, go up to the manager of the club and tell them to get Zenis right away.
That's a good
no other recommendations right off the bat here. Maybe I'll come up with something a little bit more clever eventually, but
it was great talking to you, Santu. We covered both tennis, a little bit about Finnish tennis, and your background. Super nice to have you on, and I will of course add all the contact details in the show notes if someone wants to get in touch with you or with tennis. And otherwise, I hope to have you on later on again, maybe in this podcast. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, this was Linus. This was my pleasure. I think we could have gone on for another hour easily. we got plenty to talk about. But I think nice to be here, and hope to be here again.
Thank you. That was it. Great chat with Santu. And if you want to know more about Zenith, why don't you visit zenith.com or contact Santu himself at santu@zenith.com. And Santu is with two T's. And of course, if you haven't done it yet, please visit baslinjen.com for more content about tennis in the Nordic countries. If you want to hear more episodes in English, you can find them in the library. We have, I don't know exactly, but maybe 40 other episodes that has been recorded in English. Thanks for listening, and a new episode is coming out very soon.